All right. Morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. Today is October 6th, 2025. The new week is upon us, and we are starting this one with a bang this week. Where do we start? We got a couple of big ones this morning. The first one, the deal that's like catching all the headlines, OpenAI has cut a deal with AMD, with the big chip maker. OpenAI is going to buy up to 6 gigawatts of AMD GPUs. By the way, a gigawatt is a unit of power consumption, not a unit of GPUs. Why do we measure everything in data centers in gigawatts? I don't know why we do that. Maybe we've just seen Back to the Future too many times, but I digress. 6 gigawatts of new GPUs from AMD. OpenAI is buying. What are they buying it with? Where are they getting the money? I don't know. Where does OpenAI ever get the money from? OpenAI is anybody counting and like $500 billion for Stargate? And we'll buy $100 billion over here and $100 billion over here. We hope to have, I don't know, let's just say 1,000 gigawatts of data center capacity by sometime middle of next week. Sam Altman just makes numbers up out of thin air. So where's OpenAI getting the money from? That's a big, good question, because OpenAI doesn't make money. OpenAI is a nonprofit. They're a charity, which is good because they don't have any profits. So how are they going to pay for 6 gigawatts of GPUs? Probably by getting investors to open up their wallets again, which so far investors have been willing to do, even though none of them have any clue how they're ever going to make any money here, but they are willing to open their wallets. Now, the interesting thing about this deal is OpenAI is not just getting chips here. OpenAI is getting up to 10% equity in AMD. So OpenAI is giving money. We don't know how much. No dollar numbers were disclosed. We don't know where they're getting it because they don't have it. And in exchange, they're going to get thousands of GPUs and 10% of AMD stock. And this is all like in phases. They're getting warrants. We'll talk about the structure of the deal. AMD stock is ripping on this news. It was up 35% the last time I looked. So I have a few questions, like why would OpenAI want to buy a stake in their supplier? That seems like circular accounting to me. Why would a supplier want to give an equity stake to a customer? That strikes me as circular accounting. And well, circular accounting, this entire AI bubble is built on circular accounting. And remember, I'm just like some paranoid conspiracy theorist Twitter rando who 2 years ago flagged this issue that everybody now is just like, yeah, this is common sense that this is not going to work, that this is going to blow up in our face. And it's a good thing we didn't listen to that guy 2 years ago who could have prevented a $20 trillion stock bubble from enveloping everybody's retirement account. But oh, well, it's already too late for most people. But for now, this is getting bigger. And it's just at the end of the deal, this is another story that is designed to get investors to loosen up their purse strings that typically involves other people's money, to sacrifice even more capital at Sam Altman's altar of hyper bullshit. That's what this deal is. That's all it is. But you know what? Stock is ripping on this news. And then we got two more big ones going on this morning. Japan. Oh my God. What is going on in Japan? The Nikkei index rallied more than 5% overnight. The index went up 5%, guys. All right. Index is not supposed to rally 5% in a single day. So what happened? Sanae Takaichi won the leadership race for the Liberal Democratic Party. She is almost certain to become the next prime minister of Japan. Now, this is pretty interesting because Sanae Takaichi is being described in the press as a hardline conservative, even though she is a major proponent of Abenomics, named for the late Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. And look, Abenomics is known for low interest rates, runaway government deficits, central banks printing money to finance those deficits, low interest rates. In other words, modern monetary theory. I thought you told me she was a conservative just a second ago. Well, then again, conservatives here in the United States, they talk a big game, but don't they pretty much do the same thing every time they get in power too? Look, more money printing in Japan, more debt in Japan. And, you know, as far as developed economies go, Japan is in just about the worst fiscal and monetary shape you could possibly imagine. And it's going to get worser. And so, well, stocks going up 5% in a day, that is not a sign of prosperity. That is a sign that the helicopter money, the stimmies are coming back. Stocks are going up in value because the currency is collapsing. And the yen hit a new low against the dollar overnight because of that. And borrowing costs in Japan are also going up because of it. It's getting more expensive for them to borrow money. The 10-year yield in Japan for the JGB hit its highest since August of 2008. Getting more expensive to borrow. Meanwhile, France says, hold my wine. The French prime minister has resigned. Yes. And by the way, last month called, they want their headline back. Yes, you may be confused and be saying, wait, I thought the French prime minister already did resign. That is correct. The French prime minister did already resign. His replacement has resigned. Again, he was in the job for less than a month. That is France's third prime minister since December. Guys, we're not talking about some banana republic here. This is France. This is the second biggest economy in Europe. It's not supposed to work this way. So what the heck happened in France? Well, Emmanuel Macron released his new cabinet that's supposed to be like, okay, we recognize the last cabinet sucked, so we're going to put a whole bunch of new guys in charge here. You know, just the people that Bridget says, it's okay, don't hit me again, Bridget, please. Please, Bridget, please. Okay, so Macron's like, here's my new cabinet. It's all the same guys. That was his big change. And of course, all the parties in France are like, well, what the heck, man? You promised this change, right? We got this budget crisis going on. People are pissed off that inflation is so high. They're pissed off their taxes are so high. But at the same time, our government is running the biggest deficit in Europe, and we are basically broke, and borrowing costs are going up. So we had to change things, and you didn't change anything. And the prime minister says, hell with this. I'm out of here. So I don't know what happens now. Maybe Macron can just appoint another prime minister and he can resign. Maybe in a week this time, maybe they could actually make some changes, or maybe there's going to be snap elections again in France. But they can't keep a government together because they can't get their house in order financially. And you know what, guys? Look at all these stories. You got the AI bubble is ripping again on circular accounting. You got Japan is going to print and spend. France is going to print and spend. Is it any wonder why gold, silver, and Bitcoin are all ripping in unison? We've got gold making another all-time high here within striking distance of $4,000 an ounce. We've got silver is up another 30 to 40 cents this morning, closing in on that $50 mark, and Bitcoin hit a new high overnight, over $125,500. We're down off that high now still, but still in those mid-120s. Bitcoin making new highs here. We are late in the cycle, but still ripping, guys. That is the debasement trade. By the way, it was hilarious last week to see CNBC coming up with what they are calling the debasement trade, gold, silver, and Bitcoin, as if the people CNBC has been mocking its doomers haven't been calling it the debasement trade for freaking decades while they called gold a pet rock and Bitcoin, whatever it was they called Bitcoin over there. Now they're acting like it's their idea. That's freaking adorable. Meanwhile, Greece is showing us that it actually is possible to pull yourself out of a debt crisis. It sucks, but it can be done. The debt to GDP ratio in Greece has hit its lowest level since 2010, before the crisis that set Greece spiraling down out of control. Now, there were riots, protests, and all the IMF bailouts and Eurozone bailouts and all these austerity packages, and everybody hated it. But Greece is coming out of it the other side for the better. It can be done. You can fix these problems. I hate to say it, guys. You just have to care. You just have to give a shit about your finances. And we have to be adults. But adults are not in charge, clearly. Also, we got an interesting development in the banking system this morning. Fifth Third Bank is buying Comerica for $10.9 billion in stock. There's some interesting things about that. That touches the recent Tricolor bankruptcy, and that touches commercial real estate. I don't know what's going on with this merger here. Is this like some big opportunity to create a big, lean, mean bank and be competitive and capture market share? Or is this some kind of a defensive acquisition to prevent a failure? Because both of these banks have their fair share of problems. That's an interesting story. We'll look at that one this morning. Automaker Aston Martin, the luxury car seller, they're out with a profit warning. The macroeconomic climate, President Trump's tariffs and new taxes in China are all killing Aston Martin. So another automaker having problems this morning. And we're going to wrap up the show with synthetic risk transfers. And the IMF is out with a warning about gaps in disclosures in synthetic risk transfers. Well, that's always fun. And a warning about circular financing in synthetic risk transfers. Wow. Circular finance. Well, you know, money just moving around in circles, pretending it's growth and it's economic activity. Why not? It seems to work for the AI bubble. I'm sure banks doing it. It's going to end great for everybody. Stick around for the end of the show. You're going to want to hear that one. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. And right now we've got the S&P 500 is higher by 20 basis points. I'm sorry, by 20 points, 0.31% higher for the S&P ahead of the open. The Dow is up 108 points, about a quarter of a percent higher ahead of the opening bell. And the NASDAQ is leading the way higher, up 205 points or 0.83 points. Most of that probably coming from that AMD deal. Looking over at the DXY, we've got a dollar that is sharply higher this morning, up by about 51 basis points or 0.52%. You may notice that big green candle in the morning. That was the news in Japan of Sanae Takaichi taking the helm at the Liberal Democratic Party. The yen took a dive when that hit. And of course, the yen is about one, it's the third biggest input to the Dixie math. And so the Dixie rose as the yen weakened. Now, you may notice, though, we are actually giving back some of those gains here. The dollar is now weakening for the last few hours, but still in the green for the day. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are higher almost across the board here. The 30-year Treasury, 4.754. That's up by 4 basis points. The 10-year's at 4.16. That's up almost 4 points. The 2-year's at 3.597, up 2.5 points. And the 1-month is at 4.127, unchanged for the morning. Looking at the commodities board, there go my shinies once again. Check out gold. We've got spot gold, $3,934. That's higher by another 47 bucks this morning, 1.22% higher. And look at the front month December contract here. December gold futures, 39.57. Overnight, we hit a high of 39.73. Are we going to see $4,000 gold this week? Heck, we could see $4,000 gold today. Just keeps going up. That is not a good sign, guys. Gold is not supposed to do that. It's good for me. I like to see it, but it really sucks for everybody else. Silver can see it too. Spot silver, $48.39 this morning, higher by almost another 40 cents or 0.83% higher. That front month December silver contract hit 48.21. It hit a high of 48.58 overnight. We could be looking at $49 silver in short order here. I like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, is down this morning about 1.5%. Platinum is up 1.3%. Palladium is up 2.1%. And crude oil is higher by just under 1%, $61.45 for November WTI futures. Looking over at Bitcoin, it seems October has arrived. I don't really get the whole October thing. People just decided all of a sudden that October is a good month for Bitcoin. Maybe there's historical data to support that, maybe not. But whatever the cause, it's up this morning, $124,678. As priced on Coinbase, that's higher by about 1,100 bucks this morning. We're up several thousand dollars from where we wrapped up on Friday. And yesterday, midday, we hit an intraday high of 125,750. Another all-time high, just edging out the high from August. Guys, Bitcoin making new highs here. It seems this bull run has a little bit of gas left in it. We are now 76 weeks since the last Bitcoin halving. We are in our 77th week as we speak right now. Historically, this is about the time something really bad happens in Bitcoin, but it seems there's a little bit left in the tank still. As always, be careful on leverage as we approach crypto winter. Meanwhile, we've got this big one this morning. This is the biggest story across the board here. AMD stock skyrockets 35% as OpenAI looks to take a stake in the AI chip maker. OpenAI and Advanced Micro Devices have reached a deal that could see Sam Altman's company take a 10% stake in the chip maker. AMD stock skyrocketed more than 35% on Monday during pre-market trading following the news. OpenAI will deploy 6 gigawatts of AMD's Instinct graphics processing units over multiple years and across multiple generations of hardware. The company said on Monday it will kick off with an initial 1 gigawatt rollout of chips in the second half of 2026. As part of the tie-up, AMD has issued OpenAI a warrant for up to 160 million shares of AMD common stock with vesting milestones tied to both deployment volume and AMD's share price. The first tranche vests with the first full gigawatt deployment, with additional tranches unlocking as OpenAI scales to 6 gigawatts and meets key technical and commercial milestones required for a large-scale rollout. If OpenAI exercises the full warrant, it could acquire approximately 10% ownership in AMD based on the current number of shares outstanding. And the arrangement between OpenAI and AMD adds a new layer to the increasingly circular nature of AI's corporate economy, where capital, equity, and compute are traded among the same handful of companies building and powering the technology. None of them make any money, but they're still moving equity, compute, and capital around in circles. NVIDIA is supplying the capital to buy the chips. Oracle is helping build the sites. AMD and Broadcom are stepping in as suppliers. OpenAI is anchoring the demand. It's a tightly wound circular economy and one that analysts fear could face real strain if any link in the chain starts to weaken. And by the way, this entire chain is wholly 100% dependent on an endless supply of capital to burn being supplied by investors. They have already consumed all of the free cash flow of big tech. Now they're using private credit. I'm sure they're going after 401k money. They're borrowing all of this money to try to keep these deals going, to try to convince people to buy stock. Oh, look, it's working again. AMD stock is up 37.85% ahead of the opening bell, trading at $227.04. What are we looking at here, guys? We're looking at almost $100 billion of market cap being added to AMD just on this deal. And keep in mind, they're diluting AMD shareholders here. OpenAI is getting 10% stake in the company for in exchange for buying all these chips with money that they don't have. And of course, the elephant in the room, what about NVIDIA? I thought NVIDIA sold all the chips. Well, NVIDIA stock is reacting to this one. It's down about 1.5%, but all things considered, NVIDIA is holding up pretty well here, $184.78, even as AMD takes a couple billion dollars worth of market share away from them. Meanwhile, we got this one going on in Japan this morning. Takaichi Win jolts the yen and Japanese bonds and triggers a stock surge. We've got a melt up in Japanese stocks. Who had that in their 2020s bingo? Pro-stimulus lawmaker Sanai Takaichi, her near certain elevation as Japan's next prime minister, jolted financial markets with the yen and long-term bonds tumbling even as equities surged to all-time highs. The politician's surprise victory in a ruling party leadership vote at the weekend reduced expectations that the Bank of Japan may hike interest rates as soon as this month, while raising worries about more debt supply to finance stimulus. Takaichi's election as leader of Japan's ruling party is being interpreted as a clear positive for risk assets, said Dylan Wu, a strategist at Pepperstone Group. Investors are actively balancing the potential upside of stimulus against bond market risk, quickly adjusting positions to navigate possible currency swings. And we wonder why gold and Bitcoin are up this morning, guys. I mean, this is what, the world's third largest economy? The yen lost 1.8% against the dollar to pass 150. That's yen to the dollar, and sank to an all-time low against the euro. Longer-term bonds fell on concern that Takaichi's policies will require more government spending and fan inflation. The 40-year euro yield surged as much as 17 basis points to 3.55%, and then on the benchmark 10-year bond rose to 1.68%, the highest since 2008, because 2008 was such a great year. Guys, look, everything is a mess in Japan. Look at the Nikkei 225. These are daily candles Look at that jump in stocks, 5% in a day for the index. All right, indexes are not supposed to do that. Maybe single stocks, if they post a blowout earnings report, maybe you get 5% on a stock. But the index up 5% on a political change, that just goes to show you the market knows the Japanese money printer is going to be turned on again. And look at USD JPY, a big gap up right here. Again, daily candles in USD JPY, just under 150 yen to the dollar. Weakening of the currency because we've got a pro-stimmy prime minister taking over. And that also means borrowing costs are rising. The Japanese 10-year yield hits 1.689%, up 3 basis points. Now, to really understand what's going on with the Japanese 10-year, we've got to zoom way out, or as they say on ESPN, way back. Now we're looking at monthly candles. The last time 10-year borrowing costs in Japan were this high was July of 2008, right in the middle of the GFC. And of course, this grand experiment in Abenomics and the modern monetary theory madness of Japan. Well, finally, the world is realizing you'd have to be a drunken imbecile to lend money to the Japanese government at these interest rates. So these interest rates are going higher. It's only a matter of time before the Bank of Japan has to start printing money and buying those bonds again. Well, they're already doing it. They'll have to increase the pace that they're doing it at. And, of course, the French are getting in on the action this morning, too. Kind of pretty much the same shit, just a slightly different smell. French Premier Lecornu resigns after cabinet criticized the third prime minister in 10 months for the French. France's prime minister, Sebastian Lecornu, resigned Monday, just a day after President Emmanuel Macron named a new cabinet, deepening the country's political crisis and sparking a sell-off of French assets. The premier quit less than 24 hours after Macron announced a government that retained most senior members from previous cabinets. That irked opposition parties looking for change. But in a surprising twist, the reappointed interior minister, Bruno Retailleau, Bruno R., we don't talk about Bruno, who leads the center-right Republicans, he also slammed the choice of ministers as failing to break with the past. It's all the same guys. What do you think they're going to do? French bonds fell as investors braced for more political uncertainty. The yield on 10-year notes rose 9 basis points to 3.6%. That widened the nation's borrowing premium over German debt, a key gauge of fiscal risk, to over 89 basis points. That's the highest since late 2024. Lecornu faced the same intractable problem that sank the premierships of his two forerunners, having to pass a budget through a fractured parliament that included unpopular spending cuts and tax increases needed to rein in the largest deficit in the euro area. Macron now has three main choices. He can name a new prime minister, who would then need to propose a fresh cabinet. He could call a parliamentary election, or he could resign himself, something he's previously said he won't do. Bridget won't let him. The deadline to file a regular budget is October 13th, which means the government will likely need to resort to emergency measures. I have no idea what emergency measures means in France, but look at the borrowing costs in France this morning. They're up again, five basis points higher, or about 1.56 higher, 3.573 for the French 10-year bond. And once again, we're going to set this to a monthly candle so we can kind of understand what's going on in the euro space here. French borrowing costs are now the highest they have been since November of 2011. Again, guys, it's getting more expensive to borrow money because the world knows that the governments around the world are going to continue inflating away the currency. And so to lend money to these governments, they want a higher interest rate. That's causing these borrowing costs to make the governments even less solvent. Rinse, repeat over and over again. Sooner or later, we all know this ends with central banks monetizing the debt. And this is why gold keeps going up. This is why silver keeps going up. This is why Bitcoin keeps going up. Governments around the world are failing. They are failing, and everybody knows the only way out of this is to print money. And when that happens, you better own some freaking gold. Now, Greece has shown us the way out here, guys. Greece has proven that it can be done. Greece forecasts a debt ratio for 2025 to reach a pre-bailout low. Talk about 2020's bingo. Who had fiscally responsible Greeks on their 2020s bingo card. What is going on with this decade? Greece's pile of borrowings are now estimated to have fallen to the lowest since 2009. That's before financial turmoil then forced the country to seek the first bailout of its decade-long crisis. Public debt is expected to drop to 145.4% of output this year, still astronomically high, but it is dropping. And to decline further in 2026, according to a draft budget submitted to Parliament on Monday, that's down from a record high of almost 210% in 2020, and it's just below the 147.8 level seen in 2010 when the country received their initial rescue package. The numbers mark a further milestone in Greece's rehabilitation as a borrower. It has already managed to regain investment grade status. They fully repaid their IMF bailout loans ahead of schedule and plan to do the same with parts of its rescue loans from European countries. As a result, officials now envisage a debt ratio of 137.6% next year. So the Greeks are getting their act together. Guys, it can be done. It sucks. It hurts. Austerity is painful, right? Everybody's in favor of austerity until it shows up in their house. And then they're like, oh, no, not my money. Don't cut my money. My money's important. But it can be done. Greece is an example of that. Shifting gears to banks. This one's got me scratching my head this morning. Something's up here. I don't know what it is. But these two names merging doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Fifth Third agrees to buy Comerica for $10.9 billion in stock. Fifth Third Bancorp agreed to buy Comerica for about $10.9 billion in stock, creating the ninth biggest bank with about $288 billion in assets. Comerica's stockholders will receive 1.8663 Fifth Third shares for each Comerica share they hold, or about $82.88 a share based on the October 3rd closing price. When the deal is completed, Fifth Third shareholders will own roughly 73% of the combined company. Now, the article goes on to say the reason for this merger is because of deregulation. The Trump administration is more business friendly. Maybe that's going on here. But here's the thing. Fifth Third, that's the bank that saw the most losses. They're actually the bank that triggered the Tricolor collapse. Fifth Third lost over $200 million when Tricolor collapsed. And I remember Lox Ganapathy, when we did that interview with Lox about what was going on in the auto ABS space. She was wondering what made Fifth Third go look. Why did they audit this? You know, why did they look into the Tricolor's holding? Something must have spooked them. And then, you know, Mish theorized this morning, maybe the reason Fifth Third found that problem at Tricolor is because they were doing the due diligence for this merger. That's what made them go look, and that's what exposed the problem. Entirely plausible that that's what happened here. But Fifth Third just took a big hit. They're going to take a big loss on their next earnings from Tricolor. And now here they are in this nearly $11 billion deal buying out Comerica. Now, the interesting about Comerica is they're a big commercial real estate holder. Comerica owns like $10 billion worth of debt against commercial real estate, which is a huge weakness for a bank. Why would Fifth Third want to buy this bank, taking all that commercial real estate debt with it? I don't know. I don't know what. Maybe there's something in the books that makes this a really good deal for Fifth Third. I don't see what's on the pages there. Only their accountants do. Or maybe these two banks are merging because combined, as I think they become the ninth largest bank in America, they are more likely to receive a bailout from the government, becoming too big to fail. Maybe this is a merge to survive situation where small banks, we let those die. Big banks, we rescue them. Maybe that's why this deal is happening. I'm just theorizing here. Didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Both of these companies have their share of problems. And, of course, the auto market has lots of problems, not just Tricolor, not just First Brands. Aston Martin this morning, their shares fall 10% as the luxury car maker issues a fresh profit warning on tariff turmoil. Shares of Aston Martin fell as much as 10% on Monday morning after the British luxury car maker issued a fresh profit warning, citing a challenging industry outlook and uncertainties over tariffs. The company, which is famed for both its role in the James Bond movies and its historical history of financial ups and downs, said that it expects the 2025 total wholesale volumes to fall by a mid to high single digit percentage compared to last year's 6,030 units. Now, these are really expensive cars, and they don't sell very many of them, only 6,000 units last year. So a mid to high single digit percentage decline in volumes, that's a big chunk of their income here. Aston Martin also said it no longer expects positive free cash flow generation in the second half of this year and initiated an immediate review of future cost and capital expenditure. That sounds a lot like layoffs on the horizon for Aston Martin. The global macroeconomic environment facing the industry remains challenging, the automaker said in a release on Monday. This includes uncertainties over the economic impact from U.S. tariffs and implementation of the quota mechanism and changes to China's ultra-luxury car taxes and the increased potential for supply chain pressures. So a lot going on there in Aston Martin, and I just can't help but notice, by the way, this just scrolled across. The Supreme Court will not hear Ghislaine Maxwell's appeal of the Epstein verdict or whatever it is. Good, stay in jail, Ghislaine. No, nobody wants you free. Glad that's not happening. Aston Martin stock, by the way, down about 7.25%, trading at 75.4. That is, yes, this is priced in British pounds. About 75 pounds for Aston Martin shares. And the last one of the day, guys, this is just another case of the creative accounting, the creative financing that's happening with these increasingly complex financial derivative products that are starting to be moved around between banks and financial institutions and pensions and insurance companies. And it's just another sign, you know, the increasing complexity of financial products is another indicator that something bad is on the horizon here. And this morning we got market for synthetic risk transfers is riddled with gaps in disclosure, IMF officials say. Now, synthetic risk transfers, they're a little complicated. It's basically a pension fund takes a big chunk of money and they put it in escrow for a bank. And the bank says, okay, if these loans default, we keep your money. In exchange for that risk, we're going to pay you a monthly fee. It's a way that banks can transfer the risk off their balance sheet of the loans that they own without actually selling the loans. I know it's complicated. I know it's these are derivative products, and it's probably a lot more to it than that. But that's pretty much how it works. It's a way for the banks to get some risk off their books in exchange for a payment to somebody else who's taking on that risk. Regulators need to step up the oversight of banks' use of synthetic risk transfers, which may make the financial system more fragile, according to a paper released by a group of IMF officials. Enhanced disclosure is important for markets, IMF experts, including Fabio Cortez and Gonzalo Fernandez de Onís, wrote in the paper, Recycling Risk, Synthetic Risk Transfers. There are significant gaps in data availability necessary for authorities to monitor interconnectedness and leverage and related financial stability risks in an effective and timely manner. In other words, they're not being overly transparent about how risky these things are. Nobody can see what they're actually doing. And since we're talking about risk and freeing up capital for banks, yeah, this could be a big problem. SRTs allow banks to insure loans against default by selling credit-linked notes to pensions, sovereign wealth, and hedge funds. That means banks are able to bolster their solvency ratios or free up capital to pursue growth. Typically, a lender obtains default protection for between 5 to 15% of a loan's value. Now, look at some of the risks that the IMF has cited here. SRT circularity, where credit funds finance their investments using bank debt, potentially increasing systemic leverage. Put a pin in that. We're going to talk about that in a second here. Banks rely on a limited investor base to keep rolling over their debt. Blind pools where the names of borrowers are undisclosed. We don't even know who we're insuring against default. How do you insure someone when you don't even know who it is? The opacity of transactions that makes it harder to evaluate exposures. Highlighting the risk of circularity, Banco Santander is exploring a fund with options for investing in its own SRTs, according to people with knowledge of the matter. So this bank is creating a fund for investors. And those investors can, what are they going to buy? They're going to buy synthetic risk transfers from Banco Santander's own loans. Yes, that's circular. But it's this SRT circularity where credit funds finance their investments using bank debt. That's a big problem here because remember what an SRT is, right? It's we take a whole bunch of cash and we're going to lock it up just in case those loans get bad, the bank keeps the cash. And then the bank is going to pay us interest in exchange for taking on that risk. The problem is, where are they getting the cash? What they're talking about here, where credit funds finance their investments using bank debt, it means they're borrowing that cash from the bank. So is the bank really transferring any risk? Because the money that they would seize if those loans default is money that they lent out, which means now that loan isn't going to get paid back. They didn't really get rid of any risk. They just moved it around and called it something else. And guys, this kind of like reminds me of Steve Carell when he was at Morgan Stanley in The Big Short, saying, all this time I've been wondering who I've been betting against. I've been betting against myself, my own fund, when he realized that all of these credit default swaps that he was holding were issued by Morgan Stanley, the bank that owned his hedge fund. I know that in actuality, the setup was a little different. They took some license when they did that. But banks loaning money to companies, and then those companies take that money and buy synthetic risk transfers from the same bank that they borrowed it from. Yeah, that's a circular transaction. That does nothing to eliminate risk. That actually makes the market even more fragile. And that's what the IMF is warning here. They're saying, we can't see what you're doing, and it looks like you're doing this, which means your bank's holding a lot more risk than you think it is. Again, guys, there are big problems brewing in this market. Big, big problems. And I just want to say thank you very much to Big Mouth Barry, who says, predict how badly the 2026 crash will be. Barry, I can't even guarantee it happens in 2026. I mean, look at what they're doing with SRTs. They just keep lying and creating new acronyms and new financial products and derivatives that ultimately make the total comeuppance due bigger, but it kicks the can down the road. Maybe they can keep this going into 2027. It's possible. I mean, I am not very good at the when. You may have noticed. The when is not my strong suit. All right. I can tell you the what all day. The when, anybody's guess. That's why you always got to be careful on leverage. How bad is it going to be? Look at what gold is doing and you tell me. All right. Gold is pushing $4,000. Gold is not supposed to do that. Gold is saying it's going to be really freaking bad. Thank you very much, Big Mouth Barry, for supporting the channel. Blaine Cole, thank you for being a Melonhead member. He says something bad is a-fixing to happen here in Japan. I agree, Blaine. Japan is the worst example of Keynesian economics bordering on modern monetary theory in the whole world. They're even worse than Europe, who is even worse than we are. It's not going to end well for Japan. Japan's population is collapsing. I think the reason Japan's population is collapsing has a lot to do with their economics and their endless currency debasement. People just cannot afford to have kids. So they're not having kids. And without kids, you got no future and your economy is going to keep collapsing. So yeah, I agree. Something really bad is coming out of Japan here. But it looks like the unwind of the yen carry trade will not be happening today. Not if the yen keeps weakening like this. Thank you very much, Blaine Cole, for supporting the channel. And Bro Joe's 420 Cafe says, thoughts on XLM. XLM, that is the oil ETF. Let me verify that one real quick. I'm pretty sure that's what that one is. Or am I thinking of XLM? What, XLM? Are we talking about Stellar? Is this a crypto question? XLM, thanks for all you do, puff puff. All right, I see what you did there. If we're talking about Stellar, the crypto, never touch this stuff. Sorry, guys. Look, when it comes to crypto, I am very much a Bitcoin and nothing else kind of guy. There are several other coins. Every cycle, there is a handful of coins that vastly outperforms Bitcoin, right? Like Fartcoin, Goatcoin, whatever. Before that, there was like Solana and Doge did really well one cycle. All right. There's always a couple of coins that outperform Bitcoin in one cycle snapshots. None of them outperform Bitcoin over time. None of them do. Not Ethereum, not any of them. Most of them go to zero before they ever reach to their second or third cycle. So Stellar, XLM, no, I'm not a big fan. All right. I don't know anything about that coin in particular, about its use case or the smart contracts it uses or the differences in the blockchain. And I'm sure some crypto bro is going to chime in the comments like, dude, you just don't understand. Yeah, I just don't understand. My lack of understanding has done well. Bitcoin and nothing else when it comes to crypto. Everything else just gets too risky for me, in my opinion. Bitcoin is as far out on the risk spectrum as I am willing to go. You may have noticed I'm a tad bit careful and conservative in my own approach. Thank you, Brojo, for supporting the channel. Ryan Morrissey says private equities that end up in 401k will or do they ever affect mainstream ETFs? All right, the mainstream ETFs, like the SPY or the QQQs, probably not. All right, at least not directly. All this junk showing up in 401ks, there is one risk. All right, if they start hiding all this private equity garbage inside of target date funds and things like that, it is possible that so much loss appears because of private equity that it causes a lack of confidence in passive investing. Passive investing is a new phenomenon. It was basically invented after the GFC. All right, I'm sure somebody's going to be like, no, passive investing, mutual funds have been around for decades. Yeah, I get it. But ETFs, passive ETFs, index funds, relatively new phenomenon. And the vast majority of working professionals didn't start aimlessly dumping money into ETFs until after the GFC. It's new. It is a new thing. It has not been tried and tested. It has not survived many crises yet. So if passive inflows ever become passive outflows, we have a really big freaking problem. All right. Baby boomers cashing out their savings in order to live down their retirements could swing us into passive outflows. A sudden surge of unemployment causing fewer people to be paying into their 401ks and more people to be drawing down their 401ks from hardship withdrawals. That could change passive inflows into passive outflows. And a widespread lack of confidence because Wall Street pigged out and dumped all their shit in our 401ks, costing us money, causing people to lose faith in the financial services industry and start withdrawing their money for safety. That could cause passive outflows as well. That is a transfer mechanism where private equity screw-ups could end up affecting mainstream ETFs, where everybody just decides, sell everything, I don't trust any of it. Now, that's an extreme example, right? Not everyone, but maybe a lot of people suddenly decide that. And we've never seen passive outflows before. We have only ever seen passive inflows. People just every paycheck put a little bit in the market because that's what my guru told me to do. That's what my plan says I should do. The company gives me the match. Well, when people see a few hundred grand of their savings go up in smoke, we'll see if that changes. That's the transfer mechanism there. I don't know if we ever get that bad, Ryan, but that is a risk. It could happen. And a sudden surge of unemployment could exacerbate that. Thank you, Ryan, for supporting the channel. Citrus Squeeze says, thank you, Jack, for everything. I learn a lot. Did I miss you talking about Microsoft partnering with Anthropic for Office? What does Satya know? No, you didn't miss me talk about that. I haven't brought that story up, but that is a good point. Microsoft is somewhat hedging their OpenAI bet. You know, I've been making jokes for the last year or so about how Sam and Satya are not getting along so well. I think they both want to see other companies, but they're still going to be friends. Wink, wink. Yeah. That's what's going on here. Microsoft is hedging their OpenAI exposure by allowing Anthropic to work with Office. And by the way, it wasn't Anthropic. It wasn't Office. Was it Copilot? There was a screenshot going around the internet over the weekend of Copilot in Excel, and it was like 135, and then it entered the script, Copilot, add up all previous numbers in this string, and Copilot spit out 15. Yeah. It can't count. It can't add, guys. AI is just not that smart. I can't be the only one who's looking at these products and saying the emperor has no clothes. OpenAI, Anthropic. Supposedly Anthropic is really good at code, right? The Claude Sonnet or whatever the heck they call it. That's like the one use case that appears to be actually adding value somewhere, still losing money, but adding value is in programming. Everywhere else, AI is doing nothing but making a mess, making things worse. It can't freaking add. It can't freaking count. How is it going to change the world if it can't do the maths? But I digress. But yeah, that's what's going on. Microsoft partnering with Anthropic, that is not good for OpenAI. Thank you very much, Citrus Squeeze, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man says, default swaps, not three-day-old fish. It's a whole new thing. Thank you, my creative yet morally ambiguous Chef Bourdain. Yes, it's not three-day-old. It's something new. If you put it in a new package and call it something else, then it's suddenly magically diversified and not risky. That's your synthetic risk transfers. And the fact that these hedge funds are getting the money to buy synthetic risk transfers from the same banks that they're buying the risk transfers from, oh my God, how stupid do you have to be to let that happen? And the regulators are saying, we know you're doing this. We can't see it, but we know you're doing it. Good God. What stage, Pasta Man? What stage? Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Break My Wallet Motorsports, been a melonhead for 16 months. He says, thoughts on if we are in a recession? I believe you meant to say, I say yes. I agree that we are in a recession, even though GDP is still growing and the GDP numbers looking even stronger this morning, up 3% or so. But where is the GDP growth coming from? The GDP growth is coming from a reduction in the trade deficit because of the trade war. All right. Government deficit spending, which remains at nearly $2 trillion a year, that is fake economic growth. And the AI data center build-out is responsible for most economic growth now. That is circular accounting, fake economic growth, and capital destruction masquerading as economic activity. Yeah, for the rest of the country, outside of those things, we've been in a recession since 2022. And I think the average person watching this show has probably lived that experience. Yeah, your 401k has gone up, your stocks are up, your gold is up, your Bitcoin is up, but your life is more expensive. You're taking fewer vacations. You're shopping less. You're doing less fun things. Your life is harder. Your life is worse than it was a few years ago. Most of the country, 90% of the country, is living in a recession, and the other 10% are doing really well, saying, what's the matter with you plebs? Can't you tell how good you have it? It's a bad mix. It's not going to end well. So, yes, in my opinion, we have been in a recession, although we don't meet the technical definition of a recession, two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. Thank you very much, Break My Wallet Motorsports, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Really appreciate all the super chats, guys. Thank you for supporting the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon and YouTube. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.